May it please the court, Walter Simons for Jane Doe. I'll endeavor to reserve 5 minutes of time for rebuttal. The district court granted Meta's motion to dismiss and held that Section 230 immunized Meta from Doe's products liability and statutory sex trafficking claims arising from her trafficking through Instagram, essentially because the district court believed that Doe's claims required Meta to moderate sex trafficking content. But this case is not about content moderation. Meta could have addressed the problems with Instagram by altering the defective design of the product and the operation of Instagram without touching third-party content, and therefore Section 230 never should have applied. I'd like to start with this court's recent opinion in Twitter, which controls Doe's products liability claim regarding Instagram's defective reporting mechanisms. This court recently held that a nearly identical reporting mechanism defect claim was not barred by Section 230 in Doe 1 v. Twitter. Twitter was decided after the district court's ruling and requires reversal. In Twitter, the plaintiff alleged that Twitter's reporting mechanism for child pornography was defective because it made reporting child pornography more difficult, including because the mechanism required a person to log into a Twitter account to make a report. The court held that the reporting mechanism claim related solely to product design and was not barred by Section 230. The district court here held that Doe's products liability claim regarding the reporting defect was barred because it would require Meta to monitor and act on reports of human trafficking. But the district court did not have the benefit of the Twitter opinion, where this court rejected that exact argument. This court explained, Twitter could fulfill its purported duty to cure reporting infrastructure deficiencies without monitoring, removing, or in any way engaging with third-party content. The court recognized that although increased removal of third-party content may well be the outcome of a more robust reporting structure, Twitter's improvement of its reporting mechanism would not necessarily require monitoring third-party content.
So here, in this case with Facebook, what are the alleged technical barriers to reporting?
As in Twitter, one of the barriers that we have alleged is that a report cannot be made of sex trafficking on Instagram unless the person creates an Instagram account and logs into the account, which prevents people from making a report from trafficking content that they see unless they create an account and log in. And that's another one. That's one of the defects that was also mentioned in the Twitter case. We also have alleged that the reporting mechanism could have been designed in other different ways, for example, by permitting direct reports to be made to law enforcement in some circumstances where criminal conduct is at issue. So under the reasoning in Twitter, these changes to the infrastructure and how the reporting mechanism works on its face could be made without in any way touching the third-party content that was on the website, for example, by allowing the reports to be made without logging into an account. Doe's reporting defect claims are controlled by Twitter, and the district court's dismissal of those claims should be reversed. The district court also erred in holding that Section 230 barred Doe's claims based on Meta's failure to warn about a known widespread sex trafficking problem on Instagram. The duty imposed by the failure to warn claim did not necessarily require Meta to moderate or monitor third-party content, and therefore was not barred by 230 under this court's precedent. Doe alleged that Meta could have warned Instagram users during the product registration process or posted warnings to Instagram regarding the dangers of sex trafficking on Instagram.
Why is that not monitoring? Over here.
I'm sorry. It's not monitoring because in this case, we have alleged that Meta had knowledge of a sex trafficking problem independent from any monitoring of third-party content was on the website. We've pleaded, and this is at ER 56, that Meta had knowledge of a problem from outside of the sex trafficking problem on Instagram from outside sources such as studies, press, and information from state and federal legislatures. And this court held in Internet Brands that where a warning could be given any alleged obligation to warn could be satisfied without changes to the content posted by the website's users and without conducting a detailed investigation, then Section 230 didn't apply.
Counsel, can you tell me how this is different than what we found in Bride?
Yes. In Bride, the court held that a failure to warn claim about the dangers of anonymity was barred by Section 230. This court held in Bride that the dangers of anonymity were essentially a generic danger that existed anywhere on the internet, and therefore there was no obligation to warn about that generic danger that essentially had nothing specific to do with that application as opposed to any other application on the internet that might permit people to use the application anonymously. And this court has indicated in that case and in the Grindr case that there is a distinction between cases like internet brands where the website has information from an outside source about the problem that is the subject of the failure to warn, and cases where it's simply a generic problem that exists everywhere on the internet, and there's no specific problem, and there's no indication that the website had knowledge of the problem from an outside source.
But in internet brand, it was in reference to a specific group of men who were using the website to lure people, to sexually assault people. Here, you're referring to somewhat more inchoate societal problems. So I don't know if internet brands really applies here.
It certainly was a more, as you said, it was a defined, I think, a two men who were operating a scheme through the website. But the basic principle is the same. There was a problem on Instagram, and I would disagree that it was essentially a generic societal problem. Facebook had knowledge that Instagram in particular had a rampant sex trafficking problem. And I'll direct the court, for example, to ER 29, where there's a screenshot of Facebook's Meta's internal communications, and you can see them discussing what they call the human trafficking life cycle and how the features of Instagram have facilitated that human trafficking life cycle. So I do think that while it's not, two specific people as in internet brands, this is something that I think is worlds apart from something like Bride, where they're basically saying this is a generic danger. It exists everywhere. There's nothing unique to this app. We have allegations in this case that indicates that there is something unique to this app. There was an enhanced problem of trafficking on Instagram, and Meta was fully aware of it. And I'll also note that the rule statement in internet brands, the court stated at page 851, that an alleged tort based on a duty that would require a self-produced warning falls outside of Section 230C1. And that's exactly what we're alleging here, is a self-produced warning. Meta could have produced warnings about sex trafficking without touching third-party content, including by putting the warnings on banners or on the account registration process. So under the rule stated in internet brands, this court, the failure to warn claim should not have been barred. Finally, I'd like to address the Section 1595 claim. The Section 1595 claim is likewise not barred by Section 230. Doe's Section 1595 claim does not seek to hold Meta liable in its capacity as a publisher, but seeks to hold Meta liable for knowingly profiting from actively facilitating trafficking through its operational choices on Instagram.
Can you tell me what your best argument is for why the algorithmic recommendations are a website's own expressive conduct?
Yes, I would say our best argument on that point is the authority in the recent Supreme Court opinion in Moody that an algorithmic recommendation is a form of expressive first-party speech. And as this expressive first-party speech, and under Section 230, a piece of information becomes the, at least in part, the first party speech of a website whenever it creates or develops the content in part. Right. That's in Section 230F3. And so here, if, as the Supreme Court held in Moody, the algorithmic recommendations operate to be an expressive product of the website, then similarly, those algorithmic recommendations are at least in part an expressive product of the website, and that is all that's required under 230.
But does that get around Doe versus Grindr and Doe One versus Twitter?
In order to hold that the algorithmic recommendations constitute first-party conduct, i.e. not third-party conduct, I think this court would have to find that the Moody decision is irreconcilable with this court's precedent in Dyroff. Dyroff indicated that recommendations are, essentially are not first-party speech of the website. However, I will note, at least one court has indicated that. I cited in the brief Anderson v. TikTok, Third Circuit, that relied on the Moody decision to deviate from its past precedent. But I will also note that the issue regarding whether an algorithm is first-party speech only goes to one prong of the Section 230 analysis, because it has to be treated as a publisher of third-party content. So there's still a separate question as to whether the conduct underlying the Section 1595 claim is the conduct of a publisher.
The logical outcome of your position is that it strips basically every social media of Section 230 protection, because it seems like every social media platform uses some form of algorithm to curate the content. Would that be the logical outcome?
No, I think there's a distinction between the idea of recommending, certain content because it may be interesting. That's something that this court's addressed in several cases, which could potentially be construed as a publisher conduct, i.e. you should review this type of content. We think you might like this particular content. And what we have here, which is the idea of connecting users, the idea that you should know a person, you should form a relationship with a person.
But in social media, user is the content. I mean, that's I don't know if you can separate the content from the user. I mean, they're almost one and the same.
I would argue that a relationship between a person is, I mean, of course, a user posts content, but a recommendation that a person should know a particular person is not quite the same as saying that we think you might like their content. And I'll also note briefly that the district court separated the Section 1595 claim into two theories, the algorithm theory and what it called the breeding ground theory. And so I'll note that regardless of whether the algorithm theory is held to be barred, this court also had, I mean, excuse me, Meta had options to address trafficking content in terms of its conduct, in terms of its encouragement of trafficking that wouldn't have required moderating third-party content, including changing its policies regarding identity verification and not retaining the profits that it internally recognized stem from sex trafficking. And if I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, please.
Great, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Kristen Lindsley from Meta. This is a straightforward case, despite the troubling underlying facts, but it is squarely covered by this court's existing Section 230 precedents, some of which we've already discussed already. Plaintiff alleges that Meta shouldn't have connected her with RL, which is the name of the trafficker, RL, in the complaint. But this court rejected that exact same connection theory in both Dyroff and Grindr. I'll get to that later, but it was not limited to connections to content. It was connections to people, which is in any event the same thing, but that's covered by Dyroff and Grindr. She also alleges that Meta should have warned her about sex trafficking content on Instagram, but this court rejected that exact same failure to warn theory in Estate of Bride and Grindr. Both cases distinguished internet brands on grounds that are identical to this case. Plaintiff alleges Meta should have required identity verification as part of her breeding ground theory and as part of her design defect theory to prevent RL from posting anonymously under a fake name. But this court rejected an identical identity verification and anonymity theories in Grindr and Bride.
Can you address the reporting mechanism allegation, and especially in regards to our Doe versus Twitter decision?
Yes, Your Honor. Plaintiff's reporting mechanism theory, is a design, her design defect theory, is that Meta should have made it easier for people to report harmful trafficking content on Instagram so that Meta could take timely action on that content. And that's paragraph 42, that a person seeing harmful content on Instagram could report it to a live Facebook person. Again, this theory is squarely barred by the court's precedent. I want to say, before I get to Twitter...
Wait, counsel, you can't just say that and leave that hanging.
Well, no.
What exactly are you talking about? What precedent are you talking about? Because we have Doe 1 versus Twitter saying...
Yeah, so I was going to say it's barred by Myanmar, the Doe versus Meta case, which postdates Twitter. So let me talk about Twitter first, and then I can talk about Myanmar, or I can go in the other direction.
Whatever you want to do.
Yeah, okay. Yes, Your Honor. So Twitter, Doe versus Twitter was a case that involved child pornography. And the plaintiffs in that case alleged that they had reported numerous times to Twitter that the children's images were being displayed on Twitter, and they qualified as child pornography. So Twitter had actual knowledge that there was child pornography on its site, and yet it didn't respond to any of those reports. In fact, it rejected the reports. Plaintiffs complained about that, and that was the gist of all of their duty to warn claims. It was on page 641 of the court's opinion, 148 F4th at 641. The court explains that because Twitter blew off these reports, it didn't end up reporting the child pornography to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children as it was required to do under 18 U.S.C. section 2258A, which requires providers to report any child porn that comes their way to NCMEC, and the company didn't do that. So the product liability duty was tied directly to a publisher-independent statutory duty to promptly report child porn to NCMEC upon actual knowledge, which the complaint alleged Twitter had. In this case, plaintiff doesn't allege any of that. This case is much more like Myanmar, where in Myanmar, the plaintiff alleged, and I'm calling it Myanmar only because it's called Doe versus Meta, just like this case is. So just to avoid confusion, that case is at 174 F4th, and I'm citing page 1168. But in Myanmar, the plaintiff alleged, just like the plaintiff does here, that there should have been a better reporting mechanism. There, at least, it was concretely tied to something that was in the facts of the case, which I'll get to in a moment. In Myanmar, the allegation was, well, you opened Facebook and let it go live in Myanmar, but the reporting portal that is provided for people to report harmful content on the site was not in Burmese or any other Myanmar-related language. It was in English only. So it was a bad reporting portal. Plaintiffs said that's a design defect, and the court said no. That claim would require Meta to, it's just another way of saying Meta would have to review and moderate content and remove bad content,
but
because it was triggered by the allegation that the content on the site was problematic.
But the plaintiff in that case, the remedy they asked was for Meta to really look at the content and remove it. And here they're just saying you need better reporting mechanism.
Well, what plaintiff alleges at paragraph 42 of her complaint is there should have been a live Facebook user that could review the content and take it down. And what plaintiff is saying throughout is that the reason for the reporting mechanism, which is exactly like the reason for the duty to warn our arguments in Estate of Bride, was there's bad content on the site. Therefore, you should warn about it, or therefore, you should have a reporting mechanism. The court in Myanmar said this is exactly like Bride, because the reporting claim that plaintiff is alleging derives from the claim or the theory that there's harmful content on the site and that Meta should do something about it.
I guess the question is, can we separate it? And maybe it's a plaintiff's fault, but can we parse out their reporting mechanism claim? Well, I mean, to the extent it's telling your client to remove things and moderate it, then I think Section 230 applies. But if it's read more narrowly, that it needs to have a better reporting mechanism such that you don't have to be a user who's you've signed up to report it, then you know maybe it survives under Doe v. Twitter.
Well, let me just address the facts of what plaintiffs does allege in the case, because I think importantly, dramatically unlike in Twitter, plaintiff in this case alleges literally no facts that would support a reporting claim. She doesn't allege that she or anyone else tried to report RL or his content or his conduct on the site, either to Meta or to law enforcement, and that they were somehow thwarted in their ability to do so. So as much as one might entertain the idea of a hypothetical reporting claim that somehow prevented the plaintiff's harm here, she doesn't allege that. She doesn't allege that. The most she can say is, well, if there had been, it's her theory is entirely speculative. Maybe there could have been a better reporting mechanism and someone might have reported something. But she doesn't even allege that RL sent her messages that would have been subject to being reported. She claims that his sex trafficking messages were harmful, but that his grooming messages were just getting her to trust him. So she doesn't even allege that she wouldn't have met him or seen him offline but for some reporting mechanism. So the fundamental problem is there just isn't anything in the complaint where she alleges that she or anyone else tried to report.
But is that a Section 230 issue? Is it more of,
It's both a causation problem and it's a Section 230 problem because, this case otherwise falls squarely within Myanmar. It's the exact same type of duty. It related to the third-party content, and the goal of the duty, as plaintiff repeatedly alleges in this case, including in page 42, but elsewhere in her complaint as well, the goal is for Meta to remove the content, or to law enforcement to tell Meta to remove the content. Either way, the claim is for Meta to remove the content, and she can't. That if that's a marginal edge. Section 230 issue, she hasn't alleged facts to support it. She can't just come in with a theoretical, speculative set of theoretical circumstances that might give rise to something that's outside of Section 230. That's the classic instance of creative pleading that this court has repeatedly says is not a way to get around Section 230.
I don't know. Meta seems different. I mean, that one is about stoking violence in a foreign country to remove the content. Again, I don't know what reporting would do. I mean, I don't know how you reduce violence in a country that's been racked with violence for decades. Here with sexual predators, you report it, the police can potentially investigate and arrest the individual. So I don't know if it's really the Meta, Doe v. Meta case really applies here.
Well, Your Honor, I think that it does because the complaint here for two reasons, both of which are covered in Bride. The source of the alleged duty is the harmful content. It's not something else. It's the harmful content on the site that she's complaining about. Otherwise, there is no connection to Meta, and there's a massive causation problem. And if the court wants to reach causation, I think if she's backing down from the duty arising from harmful content on Facebook, on Instagram, which is alleged throughout her complaint, then she doesn't have causation. So that is a problem, and we've raised that as an alternative ground. But her complaint doesn't say that. It repeatedly says that the harmful content about which there should be a warning is the sex trafficking content on Instagram, and that the purpose of the warning is to make that not be there anymore, to have that be moderated or taken away, for Meta not to be displaying that content anymore, either by cutting off the sex trafficker as a user or by cutting off that person's content.
Can I ask you about the Section 1595 claim?
Of course, yes.
And can you respond to the arguments with regards to the Moody? Why isn't this algorithmic recommendations expressive conduct?
Yes, Your Honor. So just a couple of things about that. I do want to mention again that plaintiff doesn't allege that she was connected through an algorithm to RL. She alleges at page ER 37 that she was contacted by him. She didn't know him. She didn't have a relationship with him. He used a fake profile, and Meta didn't make him verify his profile. That's it. There's no allegation that he was recommended to reach out to her by Instagram or that she was recommended to reach out to him. She has a lot of more broad allegations that this is Meta and Instagram do use algorithms to connect people, but she doesn't have that in connection to herself. But even if that were alleged, this court has repeatedly rejected this argument that connections are somehow outside of Section 230, algorithms, connections, recommendations, whatever you call it. The court made that absolutely clear in Dyroff, and I think my friend concedes that Dyroff covered this point. So you would have to find an irreconcilable conflict between Dyroff and Moody. Moody didn't address Section 230 at all. It simply said there were two elements of the First Amendment protection. One was editorial control, editorial decisions where you're editing someone else's content. And then there's obviously the primary First Amendment protection for first-party content. Nothing in Moody said that when you're editing someone's third-party content, creating a book of essays, you know, editing the book, organizing the essays, you're somehow making those essays your content. There was nothing about that, much less as applied to the language of Section 230. But even if there were any doubt about that, the court has already rejected that in Myanmar. The exact same argument was made that Moody changed the law. The court in Myanmar said no, it did not. Dyroff is unchanged. Moody didn't address Section 230. And so Dyroff remains law of the circuit. So I think that the short answer is that issue has already been resolved by this court. The longer answer is Moody is right. I mean, I'm sorry.
I'm not so Dyroff sure is I'm right. I'm not so sure that's completely settled. I'm not so sure how Moody exists in that world.
Well, Your Honor, I would say that at a minimum there would need to be a finding that there was an irreconcilable conflict, which Myanmar said there was not. So that seems to be circuit precedent on that particular point. But more broadly, Moody doesn't change anything in Dyroff. And Section 230 is about third-party content that in the interactive computer service is presenting that third-party content in some fashion, and you can't treat that interactive computer service as a publisher of that third-party content in the sense of holding it liable for the harms that are caused by that content. That's the state of Bride. That's Grindr, that's all these courts cases. That has nothing to do with whether both of those activities, the first-party conduct and the third-party content, might be protected by the First Amendment. The court said that editorial discretion in general, including a company's content moderation policies, is protected by the First Amendment. You have a right, a First Amendment right, not to allow certain content on your site or to allow certain content on your site. And it doesn't matter that that's done through an algorithm. The court wasn't saying all algorithms make the very third-party content that you're moderating into your content. So I do think that it's correct that Moody doesn't change anything. And the Third Circuit's decision in Anderson is just wrong by trying to conflate the two. They're not mutually exclusive at all. You can have First Amendment protection for editorializing and for writing, and you can have Section 230 protection for editorializing other people's writing, including through algorithms. So nothing's inconsistent. You can look beyond Dyroff. Grindr was the exact same thing because the argument was the dating app matched users. And Grindr's also binding precedent on that exact point. And so is, going back even further, Carafano was matching romantic partners and roommates in this court on bank, and roommates said that Carafano's activities in matching romantic partners based on their inputs, which is exactly like algorithms, it's the same thing, was protected by Section 230. So, this court has a long line of precedents saying that algorithms are not taken out of 230.
Good wrap up.
Yeah, I'll just touch briefly on the, you know, the duty to warn, I think is pretty straightforward. It's clearly barred by a state of bribe. It's the same thing as I mentioned with the reporting. It's directly on point. If what you're warning about is third-party content, and that's what's triggered the duty, then that's covered by Section 230. It doesn't matter that you may have extraneous information that tells you that the content on your site is harmful. You're still warning about the harmful content, and that's exactly what happened in a state of bribe, that the company was knew from whatever source that this anonymity gave rise to the ability for people to cyberbully, and it said that's about content. And if the duty to warn is grounded in your harm is flowing from the harmful content, that's barred. It's the same thing in Grindr, which is not subject to any of these arguments about anonymity not being a thing at all. In Grindr, it was illegal heroin sales, and the company connected people that were interested in either buying or selling heroin in groups. The court said that was protected by Section 230. And the duty to warn claim was rejected, even though obviously the harm of ingesting heroin off the street, in this case, fentanyl-laced heroin that killed the plaintiff's decedent, that's harmful. But the court said there was no duty to warn, because what the duty to warn would be about would be exactly the harmful content that was on the site, and that was protected by Section 230 and couldn't be the subject of liability.
Great. Thank you.
If I may, I'd like to focus my rebuttal on the reporting infrastructure issue. It is not true that the reporting infrastructure claim that I've been discussing was based on a statutory duty to report child pornography. There was an entirely separate claim in the case in Twitter, a negligence per se claim that was based on the child pornography reporting duty, and the court held that that claim was also not barred by 230. But the products liability claim on the reporting infrastructure was not at all based on that statute. It was a products liability claim based on products liability duties. So the issue is exactly the same. It's a reporting infrastructure that could have been in some way changed to improve the reporting infrastructure without monitoring third-party content. I'll also note that Meta certainly did not reject this theory. To the contrary, in footnote 4 of the Meta opinion, which discussed as Myanmar, the court explicitly held that that theory had been forfeit because the party had failed to address the issue in its reply brief, and therefore it did not rule on it. And it explicitly noted the holding in the Twitter case about the reporting infrastructure and essentially indicated that the reason it wasn't applying it was because it was the whole issue had been waived, and so it wasn't going to address it. So Meta did not, nor could it have, rejected or walked back from Twitter. I'll also note that the notion that reporting, sort of the purpose of reporting, ties back to a reporting mechanism claim, ties back to reporting content, was something that the Twitter court explicitly rejected on page 645. The court agreed that removal of third-party content might be the result of a better reporting structure, but still, the reporting structure could be improved and changed in its structure without monitoring third-party content. And I would ask that this court reverse and give Doe her day in court. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both for the helpful argument. The case is submitted.